Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1436, air date May 2nd, 2024.
All right, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, depending where you are. This is Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Today I'm going to be having an interview with Lev Dalton, and the topic that we're going to talk about is a solution that came out of our movement for truth, freedom, health, and that's called clean food, the clean food certification. What does clean food mean? And we have created a certification, which has really come bottoms up by the people for the people, but it's a way really at the local level really affect the food system. That's what we're gonna be talking about. And we'll do that shortly with Lev Dalton right after this.
Everybody, another episode of the Authoring Podcast. Very excited about today's episode. We have a fantastic guest, Dr. Shiva. Definitely a well-accomplished man. I'm very, very excited to have a chat with him. We're going to be talking about a very interesting topic today, clean, raw food certification. We're talking about perspective of health from the food systems. You know, we've already established that there are many problems with these systems in place now, so I think this is a great way forward. I'm really, really happy. Dr. Shiva, thank you so much for coming on.
Here we go. We're going to have our discussion with Lev Dalton on what we call the clean food certification that I developed as a part of our larger system. That's what we're going to be talking about, clean food certification by the people for the people. Let me also make sure that we're live on Instagram. So we're going to bring Lev in here, and we're going to have this conversation about clean food certification, which is a certification really that we can revolutionize the way that food is defined. So let me bring in Lev. All right. You say, Lev, are you there? Hello? Let's see if Lev is there. Hey, Lev, are you there? Let's join here. Hey, Lev, are you there?
I'm good. Yes. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I think we're in.
Perfect.
Let me just make sure. Let me just ask our followers here if you're hearing everything. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I hope you can hear us. Lev, can you do a quick sound check?
Yes. Hope everyone can hear me.
All right. Can everyone hear Lev? All right. Go ahead, Lev. Maybe you can just come a little closer to the microphone. Yep.
Certainly, yes.
All right, Lev, where do you want to start?
My quick intro here. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Entrain Podcast. We're joined by Dr. Shiva here today. We're going to talk about some very interesting topics. We're going to jump right into it because we're actually live right now on his channel. So we're going to be talking about clean, raw food certification. I'm super looking forward to this episode. Yeah. Dr. Shiva, thank you so much for coming on today.
Sure, Lev. Yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing this with you because I think you know that my run for president in the United States and the movement that we've created, Truth, Freedom, Health, we do a lot of, obviously, work exposing what we call the obvious establishment and the not so obvious establishment. But it's really important also to share with people solutions that we've created. And the clean and raw food certification is a bottoms up result of a very powerful food certification that's not controlled by the government. It actually comes bottoms up, and it took us 10 years to build this. But we have many, many people, you know, small ingredients manufacturers, some large ones, who have embraced this certification because it's a way to really define what is quote unquote clean food. And that's what I want to share with you today.
Amazing. Yeah, I think it's definitely needed. And I think you take a great perspective on it. So before we start, I like to ask an introductory question. I like to ask my guests, what is health? So we kind of define health here. I'd like to hear your perspective on it. And of course, you could relate it to the reason for the creation of this certification as well, because of course, food plays a large role in this topic as well. So yeah, what does health mean to you? How does it manifest? What does it look like?
Yeah, so if you see this, you know, if you see this bumper sticker that we have, you see it says truth, freedom, health. And I'm not sure if you can see that, right?
Yeah.
Now you notice health is at the bottom here, which is sort of the foundation of the other two things, truth and freedom. So let me define what health is. So those words, truth, freedom, health, Lev, are really not, it's not just a slogan. Truth, freedom, health is really a fundamental trinity of three phenomenon that take place in nature. And in engineering system science, we call it transport, conversion, storage. Movement of information, matter, and energy, which is transport. The conversion of information, matter, and energy within one form to another. And then the structural piece, which stores information, matter, and energy. Okay? So these same three principles show up also in ancient systems of yoga and medicine. The Indians called it Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. All right? And they used this viewpoint to really understand the body as a system. So they didn't look at the body as organ systems. They looked at it more as, okay, if you have a transport issue, a movement issue, that's circulation. Well, that could affect your breathing, the movement of air, could also affect the movement of blood. You see, if you have a conversion issue, that would affect cognition. It would also affect digestion. And now we know the gut and brain health are connected. So this is a profoundly different way to look at the world. And I made this interconnection as a part of my Fulbright work. So when you ask, so, you know, being a political activist, my view was if we're going to build a movement to call Shatter the Swarm, we also need a framework. And this same framework supports even that. Truth, freedom, health is a reflection of that same framework. Freedom is a movement of information, matter, and energy, right? So a society that allows you to move information, matter, and energy is a free society, freely, right? Or you can measure it. A society that allows conversion to take place. What is conversion? Taking all sorts of wacky ideas, using the scientific method and coming to truth. And truth keeps getting refined in this process. So truth is many ways a verb, but that's a conversion process. And third is the infrastructure which sustains this, which is health. So when you ask me what health is the infrastructure that is necessary for freedom and truth to survive. And you cannot separate one from the other. So there are a lot of people who do yoga and maintain their health, but they're not into fighting for freedom. They just want to be little yoga Nazis and narcissistic people who just take care of their health. To me, that's not health. So health is intimately connected to truth as well as freedom. You can't separate these. That's why you notice I didn't put truth, freedom, and health. Right? Or truth, comma, freedom, and comma, health. They're all one. So health is manifested in truth and freedom, but fundamentally it's the infrastructure which sustains the ability to pursue freedom and to do science in this case. So that's my definition of health.
Beautiful. Yeah. Great connection. I really, really like the way you put that there too. So I assume that part of this, right, led to the creation of this sort of food certification and much of what you've accomplished as well, right? So maybe we can dive right into this clean raw food certification. I just want to hear maybe how you developed it, you know, how it pertains to the Trinity that you were just speaking of and how it pertains to all of your work and how you believe that we should move forward as a society.
Yeah, so I think one of the things to understand, Lev, is the following. You know, I'm going to share some slides. If you want to grab it later, you can incorporate it, but you can get it from tonight. I can't share it with you. But here's the bottom line. What is, quote unquote, good food? Okay. What is, and what you find is one man's poison may be another person's panacea, right? So the important thing to recognize is in from an engineering systems approach and ancient systems of medicine, it was always about the right medicine for the right person at the right time. It's a central principle. And so now it comes down to what is clean food? Like how do you define what food is? So the notion of creating a standard for food or standard for anything for that matter, if you pick up your microphone and you look closely at it, there'll be some committee which decided what is a good microphone. And that is an American National Standards Institute. There are different international bodies. So engineers get together and they define the specs for a microphone, okay? government can sometimes define these certifications. So in the United States, for example, there's USDA Organic. That is the United States government, Department of Agriculture, which has defined what is organic food. Okay? There are things like non-GMO. Again, a bunch of people got together and they sort of defined top down what is non-GMO. All right. So standards can come from, in the case of the USDA Organic, top down, or they can come from a cabal of people getting together and imposing something. Does that make sense? So, however, believe it or not, there is a precedent historically where the framers of the US Constitution actually wanted bottoms-up movements, right? It's quite important. And bottoms-up definitions by the people for the people. This hasn't really occurred in the area of food until we came along. So people know that I'm a systems scientist. I like to take a systems approach to everything I do. So in this regard, if you look at the work that we've done in building our movement, Truth Freedom Health itself is a system. We teach people the science of systems. We get people on the ground. We have leadership programs, all this kind of stuff, right? But, and I'll come back to others, but when it came to this notion of what is clean or raw food, something interesting occurred about almost 11 years ago, 2012, 2013. Amazon is a very large online retailer. Amazon, about several years ago, bought a company called Whole Foods. I'm not sure if you have Whole Foods where you are. But Whole Foods was a set of retail stores which try to sell Whole Foods, right? Organic, this kind of food. Well, in 2012, 2013, they had an interesting problem that there's a product called kombucha, right? Which is a fermented drink. And it was at this time, starting late in the 1990s, there was a movement called the Raw Food Movement, R-A-W, raw food. And people were putting raw on different products that they would sell. So kombucha was called raw, okay? But what was raw? Who defined what raw was? Anyway, there was a period around, I think 2011, where at Whole Foods, one of the kombucha products had some serious contamination. People were getting sick and they removed all the kombucha products off, which had the word raw in it. Okay. So John Burns, who's head of safety at Whole Foods, had reached out to different people saying, what is raw? No one knew what raw was. And my background is in the field of system science. I came out of the MIT Department of Biological Engineering. And in that Department of Biological Engineering, it was the Department of Biological Engineering was originally in the 1970s, 80s, known as the Division of Food and Nutrition Science, believe it or not. That's what's interesting. And as a part of that, when they created the Department of Biological Engineering, it was more to take a systems biology approach to understand things in nature. So I came out of that department in 2003. So I've always been fascinated by applying these systems approaches. So when Whole Foods contacted me, it wasn't really Whole Foods, the industry, because a lot of people had products on the shelves that were called raw. And now if they were getting taken off the shelves, obviously people are concerned, what is raw food, right? There was no standard. So anyway, the approach I took was a systems approach. We literally brought together people from various stakeholders all throughout the industry. And the goal was, could we come up with a bottoms-up definition of what raw was, raw food? There was no definition. People were just using the term raw in, just very dilettantely. So, for example, in the arena of raw food, there were some people who said, oh, raw food is food that doesn't get heated over 108 degrees. Okay. So that was one definition of raw. Does that make sense? Another definition of raw was it had to be vegan, etc. Right? Now, my background as a systems guy with a bunch of degrees from MIT and in systems medicine, I wanted to take a very different approach. And because when we brought all these stakeholders together in 2013, you know, we brought them into a room, about 30, 40 people, consumers, manufacturers, said, what is raw? And it was like the blind men touching the elephant. One guy would say, oh, raw is anything that you don't heat above 108. Another guy would say it was plant-based. Another guy would say that it had high enzyme content, right? Someone else would say that it had to be sprouted, right? Living food. So there were many, many different definitions. And, but over a period of around a year, it took us 9 months. Remember, this was a bottoms up movement. We had to hold open public hearings. It's not the government doing something, non-transparently. I made everything public. And if people, if you go to cleanfoodcertified.org, you'll see all of our meeting minutes, everything. So we really let people participate in this process. And what emerged out of 9 months, lots and lots of hours of meetings, and you know, there's no money exchange here. I did this because it's an area I love. People know that I grew up in India, where my grandmother was a traditional healer. And when you go to villages, you have great food always. You know, you don't need to talk about organic and non-GMO because nothing is GMO. Everything is organic. But anyway, what ended up happening over a period of a year was we came up with a systems approach to take all of these people's views, these very disparate views, but we congealed it into a set of principles. So one of the principles was safety. People obviously didn't want to eat food that was unsafe, right? For example, there were manufacturers making kale chips, and they would admit to me, you know, oh yeah, we have rats running around, you know? There's no standards, right? So safety became one of the criteria. I called it a multi-criteria decision analysis. Again, everyone had to sort of, through consensus, agree to this. So safety. The second thing was minimally processed, which means you weren't cooking the shit out of the food, okay? You weren't processing it to destroy the food. I hope that makes sense, okay? That there was a concept of minimal processing to keep the nutritional value of the food. And the third was a bioavailability of the nutrients. So it's safe. It's minimally processed, but can your body actually absorb this? And, you know, I think you said you studied chemistry. One of the things is called denaturing, as you know, right? Denatured things have a different chemical property, protein structure than non-denatured things, right? So these became the three criteria: safety, minimally processed, and bioavailability. The key thing I want to mention to everyone is that our definition came bottoms up. This is very important to understand. It took more time, but the public hearings we led, all the different people had a chance to participate in this. So that's what emerged, these three pillar principles: safety, minimally processed, and bioavailability of nutrients. Then the next step was, how do you take this concept of raw and integrate it into this? So what we said was, okay, we're going to start certifying, again, bottoms up, people who manufacture foods, whether they're raw or not. So we decided you, out of 100 points, you're going to have to get 80 points to be certified raw. And I'll talk about clean also. They're closely related. So the R in raw we defined as real. The A in raw we defined as alive. And the W we defined as whole. So now we have to come up with some quantitative metrics. So R we defined, you could get up to 50 points, the real. So it was agreed that the real component would consist of two subparameters within safety. Safe, meaning how was it produced? And you got 25 points or zero, because safety should be one or zero. And it had to be non-GMO, which means non-genetically engineered, because we don't know the ramifications fully when you go make little small genetic changes in plants. So again, this was bottoms up. It wasn't something I imposed. I facilitated the systems process. So the real, you had two aspects of it. If it was safe, you got 25 points. If it was non-GMO, you got 25. If it was neither safe nor non-GMO, you got zero. But it was one or the other, you got 25, okay? So safety and non-GMO, and how do you determine safety? Well, safety is determined by sort of the source of where the food is gotten from the time through what are called control points till it comes to you. Okay. So there are other standards, control points, ISO, HACCP, which existed, but many of these small food manufacturers weren't even aware of that. These are sort of engineering systems, supply chain concepts. So we brought that into it. So out of that, we had developed for safety and non-GMO. Then the next thing was Alive. Now, what's fascinating with this, Lev, is a lot of people in the raw food community, in the health food community, took this very religious view. They assumed anything alive, and you'll see this in a lot of the literature. Oh, if you heat everything over 108 degrees, it's dead. Okay. Well, unfortunately, a lot of these people don't really study biochemistry. It's sort of, they have a religious attitude, not a scientific attitude. So one of the technologies that I had created, Cytosol, which is a very powerful systems biology analytical technique, which allows us to really eliminate the need for animal testing and really look at physical chemistry laws like sodium plus chloride gives sodium chloride, right? All of these fundamental chemical reactions, we're able to aggregate them, and we can literally model, the nature of biochemical reactions, you know, systems of them. So using that, we said, okay, let's be a little more scientific than just simply saying 108 means the food is dead, right? So that was the religious theory in the marketplace, that the raw foodists up until, 2000, until we came along, they said, oh, over 108 degrees, the food is dead. So what we did was we said, okay, the standard will be whatever food item you want to certify as it being alive will give a score from 0 to 20, right? Because remember, we have 50 points already allocated for the R. We allocated 20 points for the A and alive. And then the remaining 30 points we'll get to for whole. Okay. But how did we calculate whether it was 0 or 20 or in between? So the standard we said is we're going to take, so if you have a food, for example, there's a food, these raw crunchy kale chips, where people take raw food and they put some miso and they let them dry. Well, a food like that has kale in it, it has red bell pepper, it has sunflower seeds, cashews, chickpea miso, Himalayan salt, jalapenos, cayenne pepper, lemon juice, and water. Well, from a chemistry perspective, we said, okay, for each one of those items, we knew the weight of each one of them, in a bag of this product. And then we allocated to each of those ingredients by molecular weight, the top three or four molecules. So for example, kale has vitamin C. It has beta carotene. It has lutein. It has zeaxanthin, right? Red bell pepper has capsanthin, capsorobin and beta carotene and so on. So what we said for, we would take the top, out of those foods, again, you have to have some cutoff, it's not perfect, the top three to four molecules. And then we would, in aggregate for each one of them, calculate the denaturing point, right? So as you increase temperature, when does that particular compound or molecule denature, right? Conformationally changes, because that means it could become inactive, okay? So on an x-axis, we have the temperature, and on the y-axis, we calculate bioavailability as a percentage of things that are still active. And so that produces this beautiful sort of transition curve. So for the kale chips, what we found out was up to about 120 degrees, it's still about 100% bioavailable. After 120 degrees to 140, it's 80% bioavailable. It's not like a sudden zero, which is what the raw foodists were saying. And after 160 degrees, it goes down to another plateau, around 60%. So like this for any food item, we had developed a quantitative way to determine bioavailability. And so based on the bioavailability, let's say something was, 80% bioavailable, 80% times those 20 points, you got 16 points. So in this case, let's say you were safe, 50 points, and then you got 16 points for 80% bioavailability. That means you had 66. Well, you're still off by the minimum of 80. So the W in this context, in this model, was whole. So again, whole meant how much of it was organic and nutrient density. So we calculated those. Organic was given a range of 20 points and nutrient density 0 to 10. So what we had really developed was this systems-based approach, much different than just organic or just clean, or I'm sorry, just non-GMO, but a holistic approach that made took into consideration safety, right? Non-GMO, the bioavailability, the extent of how it was organically sourced, and the nutrient density. So this became RAW, R-A-W, certified RAW. Now, when we presented this to at a big public hearing, typically once a year, they host a massive food conference. 70,000 people show up, you know, vendors, everyone, all over the world in Anaheim, California. So again, since this was a bottoms up standard, we didn't just covet it and keep it close to us. We openly shared it. You know, people showed up to this public hearing and people gave their feedback, and we have this standard. And then what emerged out of that, people said, wow, we really now have a real standard. I mean, it's a multi-page document which defines what you have to do to get the raw and clean. But the key thing, again, I want to emphasize is when I say bottoms up, this was bottoms up. This was a certification created by we the people for we the people. Government was not involved in this. Very, very important to understand. This was a certification by the people for the people. So what ended up happening was a lot of these manufacturers said, hey, Dr. Shiva, thank you so much. You really saved us because now we have a standard for raw. But some of them, Lev, were heating their foods above 108 degrees, okay? But it didn't mean they were bad foods. You know, like, let's say some people made certain pastas, right? Or they made certain foods that they may heat them above 108. But still, most of the food was done safely. It had still a good amount of bioavailability. It was still non-GMO ingredients. It was nutrient dense and was organic. So what we did was we created a clean label, raw and clean. So raw was for those things that were below 212 and still followed those principles. And clean, we redefined it as conscious, living, ethical, active, and nutritious. Clean. Conscious was a safety aspect. Living was the organic. Ethical was non-GMO. You're not screwing around with nature. Active was the bioavailability, and N was the nutrition. But you could relax it where you could heat this above 212. So we had really emerged out of this with two very powerful standards. Raw in some ways was a higher. Some people would use a raw label. Sometimes they'd use clean if they were both. But what emerged out of this was certified clean, conscious, living, ethical, active, nourishing. Okay. Again, I can't overemphasize, this standard emerged bottoms up. And every year during the year, we hold two public hearings. And anyone here can participate in those hearings. So last year, for example, honey is very difficult to get organic certification for. So there are manufacturers in New Zealand, who have honeybees. The organic certification says that you cannot have a hive needs to be at least 3 miles, it cannot be any pesticide use. Okay. Now the problem is there, the organic certification, we found that if we actually got the chemical readings, there were certain hives which couldn't afford the organic certification, but their honey had much better profiles than the ones that got the organic certification. So what we said was you can actually submit the direct chemical profiles, you say? And this is the interesting problem, because with some of these products, like maple syrup is another interesting one. You could have a maple set of trees, which are in a location, but upstream there's chemicals coming down. So even though one gets certified as organic, it could affect other people, other areas of it. So there's some inconsistency here. So we, with this certification framework now, are able to take different categories of food, bring people in, bring the public in. They help to define food. So for example, you and I were talking about eggs. You have lots and lots of small egg manufacturers now, have 10 chickens, 20 chickens, 100 chickens. They're selling eggs at the roadside. Who is determining if they're raw or clean food eggs? For them to go get government involved, it's tens of thousands of dollars. The certification we've developed is pennies. People always, and we put it now into a nonprofit, and everyone in there is volunteer scientists. So in many ways, this is us as a people using the scientific framework to deem what is raw or clean. So think about the possibilities. We could have our own Truth Freedom Health inspectors, clean inspectors all over the world. We could develop a raw certification for raw milk. Doesn't exist. For eggs, for anything. But we've created this very powerful framework. We have thousands of products now which have gone through this. People who are small manufacturers who maybe have $10,000 in revenue to people who have millions of dollars in revenue. But we've made it accessible to everyone. But most importantly, this certification is by us, for us. And that's why when I, you know, titled this, I wanted to educate people that we have created a certification that we, the people, are able to use this framework, the systems framework, to determine clean food. And so all of you listening out there, you can take this certification and you can bring it to local communities and help them get certified for pennies, right? As long as they follow the protocol. Shortly, we're going to be creating a certification for eggs. There is no certification except pasture raised and da-da-da, right? These kind of things. But we, the people, should be able to go certify our local egg manufacturer. So you, Lev, I know you said you go get eggs. You could take the certification, follow the standards, and you could become a local inspector. You see? But it's not the government doing it. It's you as a consumer doing it for your local farms there. But again, that's what we've created. So again, this is a solution out of our movement for truth, freedom, health, by the people, for the people. This is an actual manifestation of that.
I think this is amazing. I really like the way that you're framing it here. And, you know, I studied, I took a course because there's an agricultural campus nearby my university I went to, and we took an introduction to organic agriculture. You know, we learned that it's very inaccessible for farmers to access the organic certification for money reasons, largely because, you know, there was a certain amount of time that was needed to, you know, revamp your crops and things of this nature. So I think this is really, really important because you're almost, it's like organic, but way, way better. You're looking at the nutrient density.
Yes, taking a systems framework. So what we're looking at is from the sourcing of where the food comes from to all the way it reaches your table, right? Mm-hmm. So what were the ingredients? How was it produced, right? All the checkpoints. Then we're looking at the biochemical, right, nature of this food. And then we're layering in the nutrient density. And then we're looking at organic. But organic is one piece of it. You see, there are certain people who are making food in the wild, like wild grown flowers. You can't get organic certification for that. I mean, when I grew up, you know, if you go to an Indian village, there's no organic certification there. Organic certification assumes you can control all the conditions, right? Farming. But what do you do with tribal people who are living off the land and they're going and getting honey from a hive? How can you say that's not organic, right? So you have to look at, so that's why in this case, we gave organic one piece of these 5 points, and it's a range. And the goal is to really enable a food system that people are moving in that right direction. And the cool thing with the certification, it's local, it's local, it's local. We, the people, can become out as consumers can become the inspectors. I mean, obviously, if you're buying food from your local farm, you want to make sure it's good. The government, what is their interest to make sure your local farm is delivering good food to you? But you are interested because you just told me that in Canada, it's very difficult to find raw milk. You're driving around for hours, right? So if you find a local supplier, the local supplier is going to be happy that they get customers. It's going to be a cooperative model here. And now with the scientific framework, you and that consumer can work together to make sure, are they following checkpoints? And so we've created that framework. It's an enabling technology in some sense.
You know, a lot of farmers don't want the government involved either. You know, right. I know my farmer doesn't want the government involved at whatsoever. You know, you can see it with Amos Miller in the States there. You know, there are many stories of these places getting shut down that are arguably producing really good quality food, right?
But right. Yeah, so I think you're talking about the Amish farmer. So there are many cultures. So if you go back to what I just shared with you, what I recognized after we built the standard, right, is that if I go back to what we define as clean, you know, good, clean food, the central principles were what? Safety, bioavailability, as well as, you know, this concept of minimally processed. Now just think about that. Safety, minimally processed, bioavailability. If you go to indigenous and traditional cultures, this is what they also premise their food on. Safety, bioavailability, right? And this whole concept of minimally processed. We've basically gone full circle and we basically define food how our ancestors supported food. I mean, you obviously safety here meant, for example, people learned over time, like safety didn't just mean eat. I mean, good food didn't mean just raw, unprocessed food all the time. We all process food. Sometimes people let food dehydrate. Kidney beans, as you know, should not be eaten raw or sprouted. You'll kill yourself. It's not everything in nature is good for us, right? So you learn that you want to process these foods. Human beings have been processing food through natural methods for centuries, right? Drying is a method of processing, right? Letting food ferment is a method of processing. Dogs do it, right? They'll take fish and they'll bury it, right? So processing is not a bad thing. We're trying to figure out what's the appropriate level of processing for us. Obviously, taking a piece of steak and frying it to 1,000 degrees until it's charboiled is going to cause cancer, right? That's a different kind of processing. But certain types of processing make the food more bioavailable under certain conditions, right? So we're talking about safety, which our ancestors knew. You know, in many traditional cultures, people don't eat salads. In Indian and Chinese culture, people don't eat salads because they have lots of parasites in them, right? For example, right? People will do some type of processing. Maybe if they're going to eat raw foods, they will add some hot foods or wasabi. Why do they do that? So your body releases acids to go, you know, because most foods do have symbiotic and parasitic microbes in it, right? It's a war there, right? And some of them help and some of them don't, right? And you're trying to create this microbial balance to support your immune system, which doesn't overreact. And that's really the thing that we want to talk about, right? Are you supporting your immune system to be your resilient immune system? Not something's good or bad. And this is where we get into all this dialectics. But then when you look at minimally processed, many cultures, so I'll give you an example. There's a food in South India, which is called an idli, I-D-L-I. When what people do is they take rice, they let it ferment for 3 days overnight in water, throw out the water, and then they grind it very gently and they steam it. With a little bit of, actually, they put also one of these small dals in it, high protein. Now this, if you get one of these foods, it's not a bread, but it's a fermented steamed food. So you've steamed it lightly. So you have some warmth in it and it's fermented. So it's amazing for the gut. You see, but they did process it. They let it, you know, fermented it overnight. You threw out the water. So you got rid of the lectins and then you slightly steamed it. Phenomenal. So they had learned over centuries how to do this balance. It's not like eat raw and feel great. Well, this is where we get into religion. In America, in the West, people get into these fads. They're not taking a whole systems approach to food. And now you get into the third piece, which is the bioavailability of nutrients. And that's really what you're going for. You're eating something. You want the food to get into your body. You don't want to eat 1,000 pounds of food and only, you know, a few grams are really being absorbed. You want high nutritional absorption. Again, in traditional cultures, digestion was the key. The vessel, the earth element in like Chinese medicine is what you really wanted to support. So people had fermented foods, right? They added some amount of spices. They would do certain things to increase the digestive capabilities or add things to a food to increase its bioavailability. For example, turmeric, which is an Indian herb, no one in India eats turmeric alone. It's sort of crazy to see people selling turmeric root powder. This is like no culture does this. Typically, it's added to something else. Otherwise, turmeric, the curcuminoids, are not that bioavailable. So bioavailability, minimally processed, and safety. This was the three pillars of traditional systems of food. And I didn't know this when I started this journey, but look what's happened. Through a consensus-based bottoms-up model, we came to the same three criteria as thousands of years ago. This is why things have to be by the people, for the people. So I can't overemphasize to everyone, you know, our movement for truth, freedom, health has a solution for radically supporting a clean food system. We've created the framework, but we've decentralized it. All of you can be involved in now deploying the standard in your local way. And because now we've been doing it for 11, 12 years, you know, the government really can't do anything about this because it's there. We've institutionalized it by the fact that it's come bottoms up and we have thousands of products certified by this. So that's what's exciting about this. And it's only now are we sharing it broadly with the public, but it's been a long, long, you know, over a decade journey.
Yeah. I think what I want to ask you about is the GMO aspect of things, you know, the lack of genetically modified organisms. Is there a line that's drawn between GMO and like selectively breeding something as to, you know, and this might get into the nutrient density, right? If you're selectively breeding something to really have a lot of carbs into it, you're going to have less nutrient density, right? So nutrient per calorie. You know, is that taken into account a little bit here too with the GMO aspect of it?
Yeah, so I did some of the foundational research in 2012, 2014, when I got into this in genetic, what is a genetically engineering food? So the fundamental question is, yeah, I'm holding a genetically engineered apple in this hand, let's say tomato, and another one is non-genetically engineered, right? What is the difference? This was the question. Now, in 1976, the United States had a law called substantial equivalence that was passed by President Ford. And it was a law that basically said, if you have two different products in the medical world, how do you determine, are these the same? And let me tell you where this came from. When medical devices were being created as innovations in the 1960s and 70s, it would take 7 years. Let's say you created a stethoscope. It would take 7 years to go through the FDA approval process to get that out to the market. Let's say you made one little small change to that stethoscope. Let's say change the color from white to blue. You'd have to go through another 7 years. This doesn't help innovation. So the government to accelerate innovation said, we're going to create a policy called substantial equivalence, where you as a manufacturer, if you could say, oh, the white telescope is substantially equivalent to the black one, you don't have to spend 7 years, you get fast track. Does that make sense? All right. So when genetically engineered foods came out, this fell under the FDA. The FDA didn't have a framework to determine, is this tomato, which has one little genetic change to it, is it substantially the same as the other? The manufacturers used that substantial equivalence law, and they said, oh, don't worry. These two tomatoes are about the same. They have the same color, same water content, and the same weight. They were allowed to choose a criteria, all right? So this is how they got genetically engineered foods out to the market, saying they were substantially equivalent. Now, when I came on the scene, I said, wait a minute. What criteria are you choosing for equivalence? So I did six of the most fundamental papers, which I published in peer-reviewed journals, and we took genetically engineered soy, which is what Monsanto has done. And what I found was, if you look at a chemical called glutathione in a genetically engineered soy versus a non-genetically engineered soy, the level of glutathione, which is a very powerful antioxidant, in the non-genetically engineered soy would be 3 times higher, which means genetically engineering soy was weaker. It had less amount of antioxidants. Now, no one had ever considered that variable, you see? Had they considered that, there's no way a GMO soy is equivalent to a non-GMO soy. So it took us about 2 years to publish these papers. And when that came out, I was attacked by the entire Monsanto establishment of scientists. In fact, we went to, people contacted Joe Rogan and they said, you should have Dr. Shiva on. Joe Rogan had the pro Monsanto guy on. And here I'm an MIT scientist, you know, multiple, you know, a PhD, multiple degrees. But Joe Rogan, as an aside, is one of the biggest scumbags on the planet. He's a grifter. He always watches which way the wind blows. Okay? He never tells the truth when it matters. Now, 2012, 2013, 2014 was the peak of everyone exposing Monsanto. And he intentionally did not share our research. He did the same thing with the vaccine mandates. Same thing now with Zionism, and we can get more into that. Okay? But so I understand this really well. So at that time, to answer your question about, you know, natural hybridized foods, you know, and genetic engineered foods, all the very duplicitous scientists, they said, oh, Dr. Shiva's making a big deal out of this. You know, humans have been genetically, quote unquote, you know, manipulating food for thousands of years. You know, like, look, we did crossover breeding, or we had this cow and this cow mate, right, to produce certain types of cows, right? Now, here's the fundamental difference. That is full sexual reproduction, where you have full, right, mating taking place. Genetic engineering is asexual reproduction, where you're making point changes in a laboratory without the full understanding of the side effects. You know, if cow A bangs cow B and you're letting that occur, that's full sexual reproduction. Or even in a plant, if you're letting a plant and you move two plants together, you're doing grafting, it's still full reproduction. You see what I'm saying? So this is in vitro stuff. So these guys don't want to, they just want to say, oh, this is, it's not. Genetic engineering is very different because you have full, you know, crossover of all the genetic material, right? Which is what occurs in nature. You're not pulling out one gene and sticking it over here. So this is a lack of understanding of system science. So this is why, you know, this, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It's the interconnections between these things that determine the whole. And engineers understand this. Biologists don't really understand this. Medical doctors surely don't understand this. Lawyers don't understand this. Politicians don't. But if I'm building, you know, an iPhone, right? I know I can't just change one little thing. It could throw the entire design off. You can't simply go saying, oh, I'm just going to do this one little genetic engineering change and don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. No, our research, and we proved it, shows that you make this one little point mutation change here, you're going to get less glutathione over here. So this is like a bodybuilder saying, oh, I'm just going to take a little bit of testosterone. Well, you're changing other things to your body and your testes shrink, right? So this notion of, you know, the ankle bone is connected to the foot bone is what we're talking about. Engineers, we have to deal with this every day. Politicians, lawyers, philosophers don't have to deal with this. Engineers do.
Yeah. Awesome.
So there you go.
Now I have to ask, because I know my guests are going to, or my listeners are going to want me to ask this. The microbial aspect of food, you mentioned it briefly with fermentation. Is this something that is considered with the clean raw? Because I know that like my listeners place a large emphasis on the living microbial aspect of their food, right? And so I think that's what a lot of people would think when they hear raw, I guess, in the sort of network that I'm in here. So maybe you could just speak a little bit on that there.
Yeah, so let's talk about, look, traditional people have always known the power of the microbiome, as you call it, right? Every culture, nearly every culture, always had a fermented food. Every culture, they came to this conclusion. So that's where we want to begin with. Every culture understood this. This is not something that suddenly people are figuring out today, okay? This has been understood for eons. Again, if you go back to animals, you'll notice, you know, I have two sort of very interesting dogs that have a lot of wolf in them, right? They will actually bury their poop, right? They like dirt, right? So they're looking for human soil or soil organisms, right? So this is known, has been known in indigenous cultures for a long time. So that is something we, this is not some new finding that's being done by, you know, a bunch of people suddenly coming across this, right? This has been known for thousands of years, the value of the gut. As I mentioned, the gut and the brain are related, the conversion process, et cetera. So what we've done here, when you look at safety, so we have, you know, we have a number of fermented foods that we certify. So that's where the bioavailability comes in. Like I mentioned, chickpea miso. Miso is a living food, right? You know, when it's done raw, unpasteurized, right? Or when you look at the fact that you're looking at particularly the availability of nutrients. So it's clear that the raw organic fermented foods have a much higher bioavailability, right? Because your body's able to absorb it and you're supporting your natural digestive process. But that's where this actually comes from. Now, the flip side of this does not mean all raw bioorganic foods are also safe, right? As I mentioned, you have to be careful. Again, it's for the individual. When you sprout certain foods, like alfalfa has cannabine in it, which causes all sorts of problems in certain people, or solanine, or take, no one, you know, people should do a little bit of research. If you take a raw, live, you know, kidney bean, it can be dangerous to an individual, right? Certain animals shouldn't eat certain foods, right? So we need to understand that food is ultimately is medicine. There's no religion here. You have to value the proper, you know, the property of fermented foods, but it's one part. If we're just focusing on that, you become a reductionist there also. This is one part of something, right? That you have to be, even when you do fermented foods, there's a way that you do fermented foods, right? You don't let the rice stay in there for 20 years, right? It's a certain period of time. It's a certain type of microbial content that you want to have. The body is made up of a whole host of microbes. If you look in the mouth, we just did a very interesting study on periodontal disease. We have about 700 microbes. Obviously, there's certain good microbes and certain bad microbes. It's sort of a interesting phenomenon in that. And certain behaviors will support mouth health because you're supporting certain colonies, and other behaviors are going to destroy your mouth health. So the microbes obviously matter.
Awesome. Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe we can, like, this idea of systems biology is fascinating to me, and you mentioned it quite a few times. You know, this is largely what has to do with the company Cytosolve, correct? The system, you're looking at really at the systems of this. So maybe you could touch on that a little bit more and just give us kind of the clear cut rundown on that.
Yeah, let me talk about, so look, my journey, Lev, has really been, you know, growing up in this village where I saw my grandmother do quite profound things in terms of using her power of just insight to understand a person's constitution, figure out what was the right combination for them, right? That motivated me to really understand medical systems. I was really fascinated by this whole area of and in the West, people need validation of everything. They look for evidence-based research, right? And typically that has to be in a language of, you know, molecular science, at least in the biological sciences, right? Or physical chemistry, or for that matter, biochemistry. So what evolved out of this was Cytosolve. Cytosolve is a very powerful capability that came out of my PhD work, because the goal was, can you eliminate the need for animal testing? And that resulted in this capability to really use science, physical chemistry, to really develop a way to mathematically aggregate the system of chemical reactions in a certain field, model it, and then give an idea of what's taking place phenomenologically on a certain disease. So, for example, osteoarthritis. There are 100,000 papers written on osteoarthritis. You know, individual researchers all over the world doing little experiments And ultimately, they're finding, oh, chemical A reacts with chemical B to get chemical C. And in another part of the world, someone's figuring out pieces. So if you aggregate all of those findings, those biochemical findings, you can build a super architecture of osteoarthritis. But no one was able to do this because it's too complicated. And then compute it. So that was my PhD work. I solved that holy grail. I created a technology framework to go after every major disease in any disease area, organize it, understand it, and figure out what was that nature of that disease. So we create an architecture of the disease, we model it, and then we can test individual or in combination natural compounds to figure out what works. That was cytosol. Now, it's taken me 16 years to write all the papers in the peer-reviewed journals, very quietly in the biggest journals in the world, then to actually commercialize it, where you work with people who are making products to make them better, because our way should be able to make them faster and cheaper, right? That's cytosol. And then fundamentally, to eat our own dog food about 2 years ago, meaning we literally have did the research, in this case on osteoarthritis, took us 3 years, published it, then created the mathematical models, and we went through trillions of computations to figure out, and we discovered two natural ingredients. One comes from bitter orange. One comes from chamomile flowers. And when we put those together in the right ratios, we get a very powerful product for affecting pain and inflammation in the body. And then we published it in one of the leading journals, because otherwise no one would believe us. And then we, in fact, got a patent from the U.S. Patent Office on this. Because what's interesting is the patent office, you can't simply say, I'm going to eat spinach and I'm going to eat garlic and it's going to do this. The patent office will say that's just prior art. But if you can show specific amounts and you can show that you arrived at that through a non-obvious method, you have the rights to that. So we've done that. And that resulted in a product, and I've never, you know, we've helped many, many companies do this. That resulted in a product called MV25. And I called it Momentum to Move, because osteoarthritis right now affects about close to half a billion people on the planet. Remember, osteoarthritis develops as you age and you have cartilage breakdown, et cetera, and you have a lot of pain and inflammation. So MV25 affects five different molecular pathways. This combination, some of it hits a pain receptor, some of it hits inflammation, oxidative stress, all these things. But these are two very powerful bioflavonoids that are found in nature. This is why they say eat fruits and vegetables, right? But what we've done in an alchemical way, like my grandmother would do, we've found these very powerful natural compounds. So instead of you having to eat, thousands of amounts of grams of chamomile or, you know, tons of oranges, right? We found the two, and these are natural compounds. So we're not taking them out of their natural state. So that's an example, and that's what we're moving to. So with cytosol, our mission is to go after every disease on the planet and without the need for animal testing and find answers. But the important thing that we've done with cytosol is we have now, with all the, you know, epaulets that we have and the fact that we have gotten all these credentials, we want to make it accessible to you. When I mean you, to everyone on the planet. So you have a scientific question you want to ask. We're going to enable you to become an MIT or the NIH. You could use our technology framework to say, if I take vitamin D3, will it help my immune system? We have systems models. You can go do that. You can ask any questions. Maybe you're in some indigenous culture and you see the indigenous people use some product that has, you know, solves, I don't know, a headache, but no one can validate it. And a lot of these indigenous medicines get lost. With cytosol, you yourself can go raise some money. You can become a citizen scientist. You can become your own foundation and use cytosol as the engine. And we can do research faster, cheaper, and safer than any of the largest institutions on the planet. So that's what's happened. So think about what we've created. We've created like a Google. We've created like an operating system for scientific research so we can disintermediate all the academic institutions.
Yeah. And so what if somebody comes with the most outlandish hypothesis you ever heard of, right? Like, because, you know, we got a lot of people here that claim a lot of different things, you know? And so, and within science, you know, even with what we do here, we're constantly demonized by the current scientific consensus for what we're doing here, you know? How do you approach that? Do you take sort of any sort of project on, any sort of—
Yeah, I mean, so what we've done is— Yeah, I mean, our goal is we want to let you guys— So we had a woman recently who's in Texas, and she said she's noticed in her neighborhood a lot of people are dying of vascular disease. And what she noticed was that in— I didn't know this, but in many poor neighborhoods, they have these things called compression stations. So natural gas is being piped all over the world, right? Through pipelines. And every so often they need a compression station where they have to let off the pressure. And when they do this, the natural gas that's released has all different kinds of toxins in it, 17 different toxins. And so her theory is that these toxins are affecting people's health. Now the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, says, oh, you know, each of these toxins is below the dangerous levels. Okay. But the reality is, what about in combination? You say, because you can have what's called the sum of the, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Now with cytosol, we can literally do this, right? We can literally model hypoxia, understand it, and then take all of these constitutive materials that she's noticing and see how much of it in combinations may affect hypoxia, for example. You say, we can do that. Now, in her community, they may want to use our analysis, if it's in fact true, to go file a class action lawsuit. Now, if they wanted to go do that research, Lev, who would do that? Well, the NIH, if you could get them to do it. Let's say the University of Texas, Austin. And how much would they charge? Well, probably about $10 or $20 million, right? Well, with cytosol, we can do it for $10,000 or $20,000. You see? And then we can enable her to go do her own— she can become her own foundation. And then we produce the information, they can circulate it. You see, so we've created something quite profound here. And this is sort of the aha I've had, because we have now created a framework for anyone to go do research. You see? So that's what we've created. So anyone— but you still have to follow the scientific method, right? We have to understand—
Absolutely.
The biochemical pathways. We have to understand the interactions of them. You have to validate it. So we've created that entire process. It took us 16 years. So this is really a gift for humanity, because how does research get done today? You have to— you give your tax dollars, it goes to the government. Government has their committees, which are controlled by the same big pharma guys that decide— their friends in the big universities get the money. And it's just one big clusterfuck of incestuous fraud. Here, you as a citizen can go direct, and you can use this framework to generate data and knowledge that we can compete with the establishment. This is quite powerful. So that's cytosol.
Love it. Well needed. That's for sure.
All right.
Well, this has been amazing.
Yeah.
I think I want to maybe open up the floor here to let you talk a little bit about what you're doing, your run for president in 2024. Maybe some other things that we didn't necessarily talk about today, but you know, other projects you have on the go, anything that you want to discuss here.
Well, I think one of the biggest things people need to recognize is that I've created cytosol. We've created System Cell, the raw food certification, the invention of email. My life has really been about creating solutions. And one of the things that we've also created, Lev, is, you know, an entire movement. And that movement is known as Truth Freedom Health. So people go to Truth Freedom Health, and I'll play a video before I end here. But if people go to truthfreedomhealth.com, they will recognize that Truth Freedom Health itself is an innovation. Truth Freedom Health is a foundational framework of education, curricula, technology, a community that enables people to become leaders. It's a leadership training institute. And the slogan is get educated or be enslaved. And when people go to Truth Freedom Health, you will, one of the videos up there is called Shatter Swarm. You'll understand what is a swarm. You'll see all the victories. You'll see all the fact that we have, you know, half a billion people during the time of COVID, because I was the first researcher while all these doctors were quiet, you know, shitting in their pants and didn't say anything. As a MIT PhD, I was the first one to expose the pandemic in March of 2020. I was the first one to come up with solutions, vitamin D3, quercetin, zinc, all this stuff. The first one to say, this is not about pro or anti-vaccine. This is about resilience of the immune system. So we now have at least a half a billion people who heard about us, a half a million people who are part of our movement. But our movement fundamentally says, look, if you want to really look at information, simply looking at information through the lens of ignorance, reductionism, it basically leads to more complacency, desperation, and you get divided. And that's what the establishment wants. In fact, information is actually not leading to liberation. You have more people obese than ever before, about 3 billion people, more people anxious and depressed. The reality is this information must go through the process of knowledge, which is learning how to connect the dots. And that leads to wisdom and clarity. So Truth Freedom Health is the movement. So if anyone listening, you have to become a Truth Freedom Health Warrior Scholar. I used to teach systems science at MIT, but I made it accessible to everyone. And then we have Lev, our actual, you know, campaign for president. So people go to Shiva for president. People will see how we've intersected my focus on health with the political realm. And if you really think about it, over the last 60 to 70 years, starting in 1960, it was John Kennedy who created the Kennedy vaccination bill, right? And his brother, Ted Kennedy, another Kennedy, is the one who protected Big Pharma. And the other fool, booby effing Kennedy, is the one who claims he can create safe vaccines with a corrupt CDC, all right? But all of these people want you to be in the pro-vaccine, pro-anti. That's not the fundamental issue. The issue is the fact that policies of politicians and lawyers and lobbyists have destroyed the immune system of the American public. In fact, the data, if people go to our site, you know, shiva4president.com, you realize we have a really cool download section there, which I recommend everyone go to, and there's a flyer. When I launched my campaign, I shared this graph, which shows that the life expectancy since 1980 till today is going downward. The policies of the swarm has led to the destruction of your biology. It's not the vax or not vaccine. It's a whole set of things. The environmental issues, the income inequality, which places stress, but it's stress ultimately on the immune system, which has resulted in, you know, non-resilient immune system. So if you have a child today in the United States, your child is going to live shorter than you. And this is because of the obvious and the not so obvious establishment. So I recommend everyone go to, you know, Shiva for President, and number one, get one of these bumper stickers. This bumper sticker is very valuable because you put, and it doesn't matter where you are in the world, this shows that you support Truth Freedom Health. Put one of these bumper stickers on the rear back of your car. 100,000 people see it. People know the enormous amount of shadow banning that guys like me undergo. Even though I have about 3 million followers, they stay there because they know that I know what they're up to. So it's very important to understand we have solutions. We have the solution for leadership, Truth Freedom Health. We have the solution for creating systems health educators, and we can do another talk on this, systemshealth.com. And we have the solution for citizen science, cytosol.com. We have the solutions for clean food, cleanfoodcertified.org. And I can keep going on. But fundamentally, you know, I create solutions. Part of creating solutions is to expose the problem, which is the, you know, thousands of hours of video or more that I've done, which goes to the heart of who are these people. And the fact is they have no interest in advancing life. Their goal is to advance power, profit, control. So there you go. So everyone should go to truthfreedomhealth.com, shivaforpresident.com, and, you know, get off your butt and do something. And we've created enough activities for people to do. Simply putting up a bumper sticker is great. downloading that flyer and educating people is great. Become a truth from health warrior so you actually understand the system's dynamics. There is a way to shatter the swarm. There is a physics, there's a science, and that's what I teach. And that's, beyond all these other innovations, that's probably one of the biggest ones that I've been part of.
Awesome. Truth, freedom, health. I absolutely love it. I think that's something we could all get on board with. Dr. Shiva, thank you so much for your time today. This has been really amazing.
Great. So I'm not going to sign off. I'm just going to go and continue if that's okay. Okay. And finish up with some videos.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lev. And as you finish up, I won't sign out of your thing, so it saves.
Perfect. Yeah. Just muting the right. Video would be perfect.
All right.
Great.
Thanks all right, everyone. So that was my conversation with Lev. I hope you all enjoyed it. But remember, we need to get on the ground and we need to build a bottoms-up movement.
And I just want to
shared,
listening.
Our movement creates solutions. We're not here to whine all day.
Doing the live
MV25 is a solution that comes out of cytosol. I
really appreciate you all coming checking out.
Any one of you can create your own MV25s. That's what's so cool with this technology engine that we've created. I'll play for you right now a video on what is MV25. But we did the research using cytosol, we did the modeling, we published, we patented, and MV25 is a product that can help all of you. And it comes from compounds in nature that we computed. So think about as I play this video that you too can get involved in the scientific process. And let me play this and I'll say a few more words on one last video. But please enjoy this video. Support us. But understand that you can be part of the system's open science institute.
Millions of people suffer every day from painful discomfort and swelling. But most pain medications come with harsh side effects. And many alternative supplements have little scientific backing. That's why we at Cytosolve created MV25. MV25 was formulated using the Cytosolve Computational Systems Biology Platform, a technology for precision and personalized health invented by Dr. Shiva during his doctoral research at MIT. This formulation is the result of computing trillions of potential combinations of biomolecular interactions derived from thousands of peer-reviewed scientific papers published across four decades by 68 research institutions to discover an optimal synergy of compounds that downregulate biomarkers of discomfort and normal swelling.
Hi, I'm Barbara Ann. My hands would cramp up so that I couldn't hold cards or knit or crochet, and they would go like that. Not have to use this when I played cards with my grandkids, and I started taking that MV25. After a bit, I was able to hold cards in my hand, very, very little cramping, hardly at all anymore. MV25.
Hi, my name is Sandy. I'm a Taekwondo instructor. I tore my ACL during Taekwondo. I had a lot of pain and limited mobility. I've been taking the MV25 for about 6 months now. After the first week, I noticed a big difference. After the second week, almost literally no pain.
My name is Jeremy, and I suffer from a lower back problem. Hurt my back at work years ago, and I can go to the chiropractor, do all kinds of different things, and nothing seems to help. And I decided to try MV25. I didn't notice a difference immediately, but within a few days, the pain went away and it stayed away. I've continued to take it, and even when I do things that I shouldn't do, it seems to go away a lot quicker than it ever did before.
MV25 is certified clean, 100% non-GMO, made in America, and GMP certified for good manufacturing practices. MV25 is Cytosolve optimized, which means that this formula has been engineered to maximize benefits while minimizing toxicity based on current research curated by Cytosolve. As the science advances, so will this formulation. This is our promise. Order online at mv25.life. Consult your doctor before taking any supplement or medication and use as directed. MV25.
All right, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that. This is Dr. Shiva Iyaduri. I just want to make sure, are we okay, Lev? Are you good?
I can't hear you there.
Oh, hold on. Lev, are you okay?
Sorry. There. Yes. Yeah.
I can okay. Hear there now. So can I leave this? I can leave, right?
If did you got a pop up on your screen there?
No, it just says finished though on my end. It says finished the text. Or I'll okay. wait. You can sign off and I'll just finished. Wait. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind just leaving the browser open for a few more minutes.
Okay, I'll do
just,
that.
I'll just turn your camera off there too, and then you should be good to go and just leave it for a few minutes and it'll upload. All right. Listen, I really appreciate great. Your time right. today. This was great. First time doing it with a stream on the other end, so I think it went all right.
All right, everyone. I hope that was valuable. One of the things I want to mention is that yeah, our movement is based on solutions. So we have an open house coming up tonight at 8 p.m. And as you know, every Thursdays we do two open houses, one in the morning at 11 a.m. and one in the evening at 8 p.m. And so right here, you can see that we have the open house coming today. We did one at 11 a.m. EST. We have the other one coming at 8 p.m. EST. You can go to vashiva.com/orientation. Or people want to come to the town hall, which occurs before this. We start with the town hall, the shivaforpresident.com town hall. Get involved into that. And listen, for all of you out there, go support our campaign. Get one of these bumper stickers. You go to shivaforpresident.com. Volunteer. Get involved. You'll meet a lot of amazing people. But most importantly, you're going to get empowered with solutions. And that's what this is about. This is about empowering you with solutions. One of the most important solutions, I mean, obviously you can go to Cytosolve and MV25 and Systems Health, all these things. But the most important solution you can do for yourself is to become a Truth Freedom Health Warrior Scholar. So go to Truth Freedom Health and become a Warrior Scholar so you learn how to liberate yourself and win Truth Freedom Health. And I'll play you this other video that will inspire you to get involved because this is the only way to shatter the swarm.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within. And the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you deep down inside them. That you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that, and that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left-wing, right-wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train a army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up, working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is the not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is the not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you. The Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement. And that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own quote-unquote people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhelp.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics. And I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms-up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. Now, the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhelp.com so people can sign in. They can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhelp.com. All right, everyone. So that was my sharing with Lev Dalton. If those of you joining late, we just went through, you may want to watch this video. We shared with you one of the solutions that's created by Truth Freedom Health. And my work is clean food certification. It's a bottoms up certification of clean food by the people for the people. All of you can get involved. But most importantly, recognize that everything we do at Truth, Freedom, Health and our movement is based on by the people, for the people. But we must build a bottoms-up movement. And we also have the technology, the tools, the platform, so you can be part of that. TruthFreedomHealth.com. So be well, be the light. And this evening at 8 p.m., go to ShivaForPresident.com/townhall. So you can join us.
We need to build a bottoms-up movement. Go to ShivaForPresident.com and volunteer.